guest is no stranger to the most controversial subject in American history, maybe, quite possibly, the Federal Reserve, banking, what have you, Ellen Brown. She's the mind behind and the chairman of the Public Banking Institute. Publicbankinginstitute.org is the website. EllenBrown.com is her personal website. She's a prolific writer, written hundreds of articles. She has a couple books out, Web of Debt and Public Bank Solution. You can get those at her website, EllenBrown.com. And she has a new one coming out called Banking on the People. You can check that out. But Web of Debt, Public Bank Solution. Ellen Brown, what a pleasure it is to welcome you to the Power Hour.
Oh, thanks. Great to be on the Power Hour.
Yes. Well, we talked earlier today, and what I thought was going to be just a five-minute introductory conversation turned into about 30 minutes where you pretty much solved the whole world's problems. I was pretty impressed. And the current news events regarding the Fed, let's start there, and then we'll work backwards, and who knows where we'll go, Bitcoin, all over the place. Fed has decided to raise the interest rates. What goes into that decision? Obviously, nobody in a middle America wants that to happen. Why did they, and what are the implications of it?
Well, that's a very good question. They've now raised the interest rates 8 times, and they're expected to raise them 12 times in total. So the theory is that they dropped interest rates nearly to zero after the last collapse in order to bail out the banks, save the banks, and with the promise that when things normalized, they would put the interest rates back where they were, and they would sell, you know, they bought $3.7 trillion in assets, and so they were also said they would sell those back into the market so now they're planning to, I think they're up to $40 billion a month, and soon it will be $50 billion a month that they'll be dumping into the market in assets, mostly federal securities. So raising the interest rates will obviously raise what we have to pay in interest on the federal debt, which is going to be huge soon. Within 10 years, it will have more than tripled, and within 5 years, it will have passed what we pay for the military, which we already know is excessive.
Massive.
Yeah, massive. So interest is going to kill us. In fact, the federal debt is not, I would argue, it's not really the problem. The federal debt is our money supply. The problem is the interest. And then what it does to businesses and ordinary people is terrible, particularly all those people that have variable rate mortgages that are going to go up, or variable rate loans of any sort that are going to go up. And you can expect that student debt's interest rates will go up. All the interest rates will be going up. So this will crimp the market. So why do they do it? They have done this, depending on how conspiratorial you want to get, but they've done this routinely, booms and busts. So they create booms by lowering the interest rate. Everybody jumps in, borrows a lot of money, speculates with it, and then they create busts by raising the interest rates. A lot of companies go bankrupt, and this all serves the banks, which the Federal Reserve is basically working for. They say they're an independent Federal Reserve, but that means they're independent of government. They are not independent of the banks. And these decisions are made behind closed doors by the Federal Open Market Committee, which is largely controlled by the banks. It's 12 members, 7 of whom are from the Federal Reserve Board, which is appointed by the President, confirmed by Congress, but 5 members are heads of the 5 of the 12 presidents of the Federal Reserve banks, all of which are 100% owned by the banks in their district. We don't know what goes on.
Let me interject, Ellen. Let me interject to that point right there. Supposedly, there's supposed to be 7 officers on the Fed board, and right now, I believe 4 of them are vacant. There's only 3 in their position. Is that true? Am I right there? Or what?
Right. And two of them were already appointed by President Trump, and he has the possibility of appointing the rest. So he could arguably control the Fed. But it does depend on who he appoints. I'm hoping he would appoint somebody that understands there are a lot more expansive things you could do with this central bank than what they're doing now. They are not serving the public, and they are not serving the economy. They are just serving the banks. Maybe arguably.
Well,
go ahead.
Let me clarify what you said. The 12 member of the Fed Open Market Committee, 12 members, the seven from the Federal Reserve Board, and then the five from the heads of banks. Because four of them are not filled, what you're telling me is three from the Fed Board, which at least has some vague accountability to government and to elections, and then you have five from the banks which have no account. You're telling me basically these decisions are being made by the whole banking industry right now.
That's right. And they serve the banking industry, and they're not serving us. But they make their arguments for why, theoretically, they are serving us, like protecting us from inflation. As soon as unemployment hits 4.7%, they call that full employment. And so alarm bells ring, and they scurry around, and they think once we hit full employment, we're going to have inflation. That's called the Phillips curve. But the Phillips curve has been debunked. It just doesn't work. You can look at Japan. They've had zero interest rates for decades, or very low interest rates, and they can't even get their inflation up to 2%. So they have these bogus arguments for why they should be doing what they're doing. But you can see who's really served and who isn't served by all that.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back on something you said I thought was interesting, that the Fed is buying up assets and that they're buying bonds or what have you. Maybe go into that a little deeper, and then they're supposed to sell them back on the market. Well, recently we've seen Russia, which has dispelled American treasuries. China certainly has. Other countries of the world are not so hip to be buying these treasuries anymore. What does that put us in that kind of environment?
Well, you do often hear that this is going to be a big crisis, but there's an easy solution. Have the Federal Reserve buy those securities again, as they did do. And, I mean, they're already holding some of them, and they've done it before historically. And I would argue that's who should own it. I think the whole federal debt should be held by the central bank, because they rebate the interest to the government or to the Treasury after they deduct their costs, which means it's very close to interest-free debt, and that's the way to keep it interest-free. But people do worry about that.
What you're saying, the central bank buy it, that's a little different than the Federal Reserve being prompted by the banking industry. So they buy it, then they have a financial vested interest. Okay, if we're going to buy all the debt, well, then let's raise the interest rate so that we get more money. I mean, it just seems ABC to me. Am I missing something?
Well, if the Federal Reserve buys the debt, they are required to return their profits to the Treasury, so they don't get the money. And that's why they're selling their debt back into the market, because then the market, which is largely those big investors like BlackRock and, you know, big institutions and banks, big banks, they're the ones getting the profits instead of the Treasury being able to get back its own interest. So I would say but they're not doing it, and they probably won't do it because they're controlled by the private banks, which like it the way it is.
Well, this is such an important point because we often, you know, I think it's common, it's almost common knowledge now. Believe me, my brother-in-law told me that the Federal Reserve is privately owned. If my brother-in-law knows that, it's just about common knowledge in America. But the Federal Reserve is not exactly the governmental institute that we that we maybe have believed that it was. Anyway, this is like the Wizard of Oz, the curtain, it's like a three-card money going on. The Federal Reserve prints the money, then they buy the treasuries, or they sell the treasuries, or the banks buy it, or whatever. It's the whole system is just feeding the banks. It's very, very confusing. Do we have a central, government-owned central bank, or do we have a private monopoly that is using quasi-governmental powers to their benefit?
Yes, the quasi-governmental powers are being used to the benefit of the banks. But the good of people like your brother, did you say your brother or your brother-in-law?
My brother-in-law.
Understanding what's going on. It seems to me that more and more people are understanding what's going on. And we have the power. I mean, it's constitutional. The Federal Reserve was created by Congress. It could be renegotiated at the very least by Congress. I mean, the Federal Reserve Act could be rewritten to change its mandate to actually serve the economy and serve the people instead of serving the banks. But we don't do it because of ignorance. People think that they don't have power. You know, people tend to, it's such a daunting proposition, and they think, well, what can I do about it? They don't even really want to know because it's just sort of depressing. Knowing how things really are.
I think the politicians, once they get some idea, I mean, Ron Paul is one of the few, but once these politicians get the idea that maybe we should do something with the Federal Reserve, I have it in the back of my mind that they sit them down in a dark room and then they play the Zapruder film where Kennedy was shot in the back of the head, and it kind of brings them back to their senses. Maybe that's just me.
I agree. I think that's what they do with presidents, politicians in general, because you see so many that just change their tune, which when they get in, and your sense when you hear them speak is that they're actually sincere. They meant to change things, but it just doesn't work out. But speaking of Ron Paul,
go ahead.
Ron Paul had actually proposed that we could solve the debt ceiling problem by having the Federal Reserve just buy up the debt or a portion of the debt, because it's silly to have one arm of the government lending to another arm of the government and saying we're in debt. You could just wipe that off the books, call it zero.
Auditing the Fed, Ron Paul is famous for calling for that. How crucial is it to end this nightmare, auditing the Fed? How important?
Well, it would be ideal to audit the Fed. Yeah, I mean, that is something we need to know, is what they're up to. I think we've got way too much secrecy going on. I mean, the whole point of the Fed making decisions in secret was supposedly like in 2008. If you were banking at a Citibank or something that was about to go under, everybody would panic and pull their money out, and therefore you had to keep all that secret.
Segment with Ellen Brown, author of the book Web of Debt and Public Bank Solution, and a new book coming out. You can check that out. EllenBrown.com, of course, PublicBankingInstitute.org is her other thing that she's involved in. Thing, big thing, the mind of Ellen Brown. A great conversation. We're talking during the break about these positions not filled, because there's now this open committee that makes these decisions on rate hikes and other things. There's 12 members. 5 come from the banking industry. 7 come from the Federal Reserve Board, supposedly. Right now, 4 of those positions on the Federal Reserve Board are not filled. So it's 3 from there and then 5 from the banks. Who's making these decisions? The private banks are making these decisions on rate hikes and with the economy. From your position, is the Trump effect real? Is the economy ramping up? Because I feel like we're going in a good direction. I think jobs are coming back. Investment is coming back. But it's not like the man on the street is doing super good. I think this is going to take some time. Am I looking at this right? It's not like things are just roaring.
Agreed, and President Trump has criticized the Federal Reserve for raising interest rates because it's putting a damper on any good he may be doing. I just wrote an article about the fact that central banks globally are buying up stocks, and they're all in cahoots, as we know. They work together. So they're propping up the U.S. stock market, and they're not. It used to be when they first started buying stocks, it was because maybe General Motors was going bankrupt or something. It was like an emergency thing. But now they're doing it actually to make money, and they're doing it just by printing the money and buying the stocks. So it makes the stock market look good, and then everybody points to the stock market and says, the economy's doing great. But as you say, the man in the street, I mean, here in Los Angeles, we have a horrible homeless population. There are a lot of people that are doing not well at all. So, yeah, I agree.
Is it, well, let me, God, there's so many directions we can go with this. You're so well-versed on these things. You just get my mind clicking. Let's go back to simplicity. Ron Paul, you talked about his plan to basically the Fed to buy all the debt so that there's no interest. Explain that, again, real slow for me and everybody listening here, and then how easy or how difficult would that be to enact?
Okay. Actually, I think I misspoke on that. He was saying the Federal Reserve already held, I think at that point, $1.4 trillion, something like that, in federal debt. And we had a debt ceiling crisis where everybody said, we can't go any further into debt. And Ron Paul said, well, just wipe out that debt. I mean, it's silly to have on your books a debt to yourself. So you could just write that off and deduct that from the debt that we have, and then we would no longer be, we would still be under the debt ceiling. That's what he was saying. But that, so I would agree, we should, the central bank should hold all the federal debt. Really, our money is our debt. We have a $14 trillion M2 money supply. That's the larger money supply. And we have $14 trillion of debt that's held by the public, like not counting what's held by the government itself. So the debt is actually $21 trillion, but let's see, $7 trillion of that is held by the government. So it's debt to itself. So $14 trillion is out there in the economy, and so is $14 trillion in the money supplies. All of our money, virtually all of it, is now created by banks as debt. So you've got a balance sheet. You've got plus ones on one side and minus ones on the other side. You need that debt to balance the money supply. If you pay off the debt, you shrink the money supply, and that's been shown historically that it precipitates recessions. So the debt is not a bad thing. Go ahead.
We're about to go on a break. Let me say a quick little story and then get your reaction on the other side. Okay, let's go back to the gold standard or when we had silver, gold money, the Federal Reserve came into being, they withdrew all the gold. I'm oversimplifying, but just stay with me. Let's say in America you took up all the old money, silver, gold, whatever, and you replaced it all with Federal Reserve notes. You know, let's say $1 million, whatever. You put $1 million into circulation. This is all Federal Reserve notes that are made up. And they're just made up out of thin air. They're not really backed by much except of good faith and credit. Then you have to pay an interest back to the system, convoluted as it is. Okay, if there's $1 million in circulation and you have to pay interest, then that means you have to pay, say, 5% interest. That's a random number. You've got to pay $1,050,000 back. Well, there's only $1 million in circulation. You have just created a system where it is impossible to ever settle the balance sheets. On the other side, Ellen, please react to that scenario. ThePowerHour.com. Stay tuned. Please stop that music. Can you hear me, Eric? Please stop that music. There we go. The solar hydrant, he's put five aside for Power Hour listeners. So you're not going to have to wait the 8 weeks because of our relationship with him. So here's what you're getting. You're getting 10% off the price, the free hydro wash attachment, the replacement filter pack, a total value savings of $264, almost $300. There's five available, total price with shipping to the doors, $1,322. That's a great deal. And the Man of Food, 20% off. Again, we'll prioritize Power Hour, Power Mall orders. The Man of Food. call the Power Mall. You got to call the Power Mall, 877-817-9829. Mother Earth Minerals, you guys have asked for it. We went and got it again. Truot, he's going to be on the show, I think, tomorrow. 10% off introductory prices, Mother Earth Minerals, all on sale at the Power Mall. Super Super Silver, 10% off. REM Sleep, 10% off. 877-817-9829. This is how we're funded. We don't get the check from George Soros. We don't have the central banks buying up our paper, buying our products. We don't have some imaginary board that we made up where we can print Monopoly money and then vote on what it's worth. We don't have that over here, Ellen. I don't know about you, but we don't.
No. We don't even have products and stuff.
Yeah. So my scenario about the money, I mean, it was a little simplified, but tell me where I'm wrong. Are we not just set up in a whole system that the web of debt, that's the name of your book. I mean, what else, how can we ever get out of this?
Yeah, totally. I agree. I mean, there is, the argument has been made that it's possible to pay off these debts. Like, for example, let's say you borrowed $1,000 payable at 20% interest, $100 a month for a year. And let's say it's from the bank, and then the bank hires you to scrub its floors. And every month they pay you $100 to scrub the floors. And then you pay that same $100 back. So because of the velocity of money, et cetera, it could theoretically be possible for you to pay off your debt and still keep a few bucks. I guess you'd pay off the debt. They'd get a lot of free labor for printing money that they didn't
exactly
have.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about, Ellie. Yeah. What are you talking about? You just stole my labor is basically what you did by this system. That's exactly what's going on. And we're not talking about you and me working at the laundromat or anything. We're talking about the whole money supply coming from the Federal Reserve System. All competing monies are illegal now. All the money comes from the Federal Reserve System. That bastion of transparency, tongue-in-cheek, comes from them. And if they put $1 million, $1 billion, $1 trillion into circulation, and you charge interest, then you owe $1 trillion, $1 trillion, $100 billion. Well, hell, there's only $1 trillion in circulation. How in the, you did $1.1 trillion doesn't even exist, Ellen. It doesn't even exist.
And that was the whole basis of my book, Web of Debt. But I did get that argument in response. But here's what I would say to that as well. First of all, what you've just done is made a slave out of this debtor for all that time. And in the real world, first of all, the bank does not hire its borrowers. They put that money off somewhere in some speculative venture, and the money never comes back into the commercial system. It goes into offshore tax havens where we've got like $21 trillion now or so. There's a lot of money that just is stuck in savings, like it might just be on balance sheets in stock markets or, you know, it's going around and around in the speculative economy, but it never comes back in the real economy. So there is always a shortage of money in the real economy to pay off the debts. And that means that the only way you can pay it is somebody has to borrow, keep borrowing. And that's why you have to have this continual growth in the money supply, continual growth in the economy. And that's why we're, you know, devastating the earth, because everybody's got to get more money and more money to pay off their debts. It's just a very bad system.
Well, let's go back to, I think you just said it. It's a web of debt. It's a slave system. I don't know how anybody else, brass tacks, you get right down to it. This is a slave system. Even Ron Paul's system, which we'll get to the gold standard, silver money. We're going to talk about that in a second, and we have a little different opinion. I think it's very interesting, your point. But Ron Paul, tell me his plan if the Fed's going to buy up all the debt. I get it. Why should we owe anybody else? Kennedy was the last president to print U.S. notes, no Federal Reserve notes in 63. We saw what happened to him. I get that point. But what Ron Paul is advocating, that we buy up our debt instead of other people, how is that any different than Zimbabwe or Venezuela or, you know, fill in the blank?
Oh, it's very different. They don't owe their debt in their own money. That's the thing. As long as you keep it internal, it works. All these countries that have gotten in trouble, like Germany in the 1920s, this was money owed in other people's currencies. So they couldn't just print the money. And then the speculators get in, and they know that the government is heavily in debt. They know that this currency is going to go down, and so they bet against it. I mean, short selling should be illegal, and naked short selling should definitely be illegal, but it's not. So they can jump in there, sell somebody else's, you know, borrow and sell money into the currency system and drive those currencies down, down, down. And it's because the currency has collapsed, not because the system internally wouldn't work. If it was all internal and you owe the interest to yourself, basically, then it would be like a big community currency system, and it would work. You'd have debt created and debt paid off. It would come and go organically. I would suggest one thing about what you said before about the Federal Reserve printing all the money. They don't. The Federal Reserve only prints 5% of the money. All of the rest is created privately by banks when they make loans. And this has been confirmed by most recently by the Bank of England their quarterly report.
That is such a good point. Ellen, that is such a good point. Oh, my gosh. I forgot about all that. This is, ladies and gentlemen, I know a decent amount about this. I mean, I'm no Ellen Brown by any means, but I know a decent amount about this. And I forget about these, like, bombshell important points. Ellen, what you just said, money, so when you go, people are under the illusion that you go to the bank, I want to buy a car, loan me $20,000 so I can go buy this car. Okay? We have the perception that they take depositors' money, they pay them a certain percentage of interest, and then they loan it to us at a little bit higher interest so the bank can make a little money, everybody's happy, and then that's where the $20,000 came from. That's not the situation at all, is it, Ellen?
No. They create the money that they lend on their books. If you trace it back to the 19th century, banks actually literally printed banknotes. So they would pay you these paper banknotes, and they knew that they could, and it was backed by gold, supposedly. So these were promissory notes for gold. And they knew that they could print 10 times as many notes as they had gold, because most people didn't come for their gold. It was more secure in the bank, they thought, and the paper notes were a lot more convenient to trade. So they just knew this from trial and error that 10% was about right. And then in 1865, with the National Bank Act, there was an attempt to get the local banks to join the national system, and so they heavily taxed these banknotes. So the banks, very cleverly, figured out that they didn't really need to issue notes, that all they had to do was write the money into an account and give you a checkbook, and you would write the note. You would write the check, which was, in effect, the bank's note. And now we hardly even use checkbooks. We just use our debit cards or our credit cards or whatever. But we're still just trading in bank credit. We are not trading in something issued by the government or something issued by the central bank of the government, which isn't even the government.
My God, Ellen, I'm listening to you. You are so good at this. This is the biggest damn con in the history of the world. Am I paranoid?
No, I totally agree with you. I was a lawyer by trade, and then I started writing when my ex-husband went in the Foreign Service. I wrote 10 books on health and the politics of health, and then I realized that if you want to fix the system, you got to fix the money system, because that is where they get their power. It's basically one big cartel that owns the world, and they're buying it up. And how do they do it? They issue the money supply.
I've played Monopoly before. Everybody ever play Monopoly? You know how every game of Monopoly ends? One person owns everything, and everybody else is bankrupt. And then where does all the money go back to the bank? So all the money except the very, very top, very top person, all the money ends up back in the bank. I've seen this before. I've played Monopoly for a long time. What a pleasure it's been to introduce Ellen Brown to you. EllenBrown.com, the website, the book. The main book probably that we've talked about today is Web of Debt. She has another one called Public Banking Solution, which we're going to talk about right now. And she has another one on the way, so be sure that you look for that. Ellen is very insightful in this very complicated, convoluted, my gosh, procedure, process, as you can see. At the bottom, it's just a con. That's my opinion. Anything that can decentralize this banking power out of the hands of this cabal, because that's what it is, I think let's look at, let's consider. The public banking, what is public banking? What are we looking at? I know California, they're talking serious about this. Where are we, Ellen?
Right. Well, when I wrote Web of Debt, it was all about how banks, not the government, create the money supply and what a bad thing that was. But the more I thought about it, it's not actually a bad system. If we the people own the banks, it's actually a good system. That states do not have the power under the Constitution to issue money directly, but they could have a bank in the same way that private banks do, and in that way they can issue new money that, you know, actually multiply the money supply that's circulating in their local economy, stimulate business, and direct the credit where it needs to go. So the Public Banking Institute was founded in 2011, and we now have many cities and states that are pursuing setting up their own banks. We only have one bank that's been around for the last 100 years, public bank, and that's the Bank of North Dakota. And the reason I started writing about public banking was I knew they were the only state that had their own bank. And so I was watching it, and it turned out they were the only state that escaped the credit crisis. They were the only state that stayed in the black the whole time. They had the lowest unemployment rate in the country, the lowest foreclosure rate, the lowest default rate, the most banks per capita. They didn't lose any banks during the crisis. So it was a good model, and so I started writing about it, and that's how we get started. And right now in California, we have this very active young people, millennials, a group of millennials that persuaded our city council in L.A. to pull their money out of Wells Fargo. But then the question is, where do you put it? Because you put it in Chase or, you know, another big bank that's got another litany of frauds against it.
Well, yeah,
so public bank and the local banks are too small. So a public bank was the natural alternative. So the city council, of their own volition, put it on the November ballot to get voter approval for a city-owned bank. So we're quite excited about that right now. That's our big news, our big push.
Very good. So what will that do for the people right there in that community?
Well, if we follow the Bank of North Dakota model, which I would recommend, you take the city's deposits, which are now in Wall Street, and they have no obligation to invest that back into our local community. And, of course, we know they don't. They make loans to big hedge funds. They'd much prefer a big hedge fund loan to a local business loan. So you take that money, put it in your own bank, and take a certain amount of capital. Right now, we already have loan funds, but let's say you had $1 million in a loan fund. You could lend out $1 million, wait for it to come back, lend it again. But if you took that $1 million and you made it capital in a bank, you can lend it out 10 times. You do need deposits to back the thing, to make, you know, to balance the books. But we've got the deposits. They're sitting there in Wall Street. So just pull them out of Wall Street, put them in your own bank, leverage your own capital, and then the city has the power to direct that money where it's needed. Or what we're recommending is just refinance your own debt at a lower interest rate. And then the money that you save can be used for all those public projects, like affordable housing, I think, is number one right now in Los Angeles.
Well, let me interject here, because I'm one of the more constitutional gold, silver, bullish people that you'll meet. In the Constitution, it says that no state shall make anything but gold and silver coin a tender in payment of debts. Now, gold and silver, as we've seen, contrasting it to paper money, fiat money, that's all these things that we're talking about, even your public bank, they'll create the same problem eventually, or certainly could, that the Federal Reserve has. It's just not on a federal level, it's just on a local level, but still has the same flaws. Now, whatever shortcomings gold and silver might have, gold and silver doesn't owe anybody anything. It's honest. It's not created out of thin air, and it's tangible wealth for thousands of years. Why can't gold and silver be the standard again, or our money's at least, if nothing else, is pegged to it?
Well, the first question is, where are you going to get the gold and silver? I mean, is that if you say that the state can only pay its debts in gold and silver, it's going to have to buy some gold or silver, right? With what?
Well, there has to be a great point. There's going to have to be some bridge. We definitely have separated from it, so there's going to have to be some accommodation made so we can get back there somehow. I'm not quite sure. We were there, and then we jumped off of it, so now we got to jump back on with some bridge there. So that'd be my... Go ahead.
Well, the reason that things collapsed and we went off the gold standard in 1933 was there was simply not enough gold. I mean, if you do it one-to-one, there's clearly not enough gold to do all the dollar trades that happen in the country. And if you do it on a fractional reserve system, what happened in 1930 was that people were rushing to the bank when they had these debt problems. They were all, and they knew the banks were collapsing. They were rushing to the bank, pulling out their gold. But at that time, it was a 20% reserve requirement. So every time they pulled out $2 in gold, another $3 in the money supply collapsed. So the money supply just shrunk right down, and there was no money to buy stuff. So you had like fruit rotting in the fields while people were starving, but you didn't
Okay, I'm gonna let me pause you right there. We need to have you on again. We have some more time. Please come on again soon. It's no different. Let's say that happened. It's no different than reserve raising interest rates or lowering interest rates, flooding the market with money, and then pulling it back and yanking the rug out from under us. It's no different. They're able to control it. At least if something is pegged to gold and silver and finite resource, if there's not enough of it, then things will just cost less. And if it's in our own universe, in America or what have you, and confined to our own universe, what does it really matter? That's the same argument. These are all the same things. At least we don't have central bankers voting to raise the interest rates that they receive on the money that they bought from us, that they made of us in air, at least. God Almighty. Anyway, last thought, EllenBrown.com. Last thought is yours.
Okay, well, that's what they said in 1930, but the prices don't go down. The prices are sticky.
The Federal Reserve was already taking the gold, Ellen, in the Federal Reserve Charter, they took the gold. They already took the damn gold. We got to have you back. I'm sorry. That was not fair, Ellen.
I ambushed you.
All right.
Great to have you on. God bless,
right,
and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
God bless, everybody.